and welcome to our expert interview today. I'm delighted to welcome today our expert, Nick. And before we get started, I'm going to just tell you a little bit about Nick's expertise and why we're talking with him today. So Nick Williams, his expertise lies in helping people transform their loves and passions into profitable businesses. Nick is founder of Heart at Work London, co-founder of the Inspirational Learning Company, author of 5 books, including the best-selling The Work We Were Born to Do, How to Be Inspired, and Powerful Beyond Measure. Nick works to help people develop the courage to harness their inspiration, talent, and their fears as forces for growth. Nick has actually so many accolades that we could use the whole recording today on just going through them all. So on the Chrysalis Effect this week, you'll see the link to Nick's website for you to check out in more depth later. So Nick, I'd love to welcome you today.
Thank you very much indeed. Thanks for having me on board.
Oh, it's wonderful. I know when we spoke before, when we were setting this all up, we both got, really... sort of into great conversation around the importance of authenticity and living your authentic life and how that impacts health. And so with that in mind, Nick, and for the benefit of our listeners, can you tell us what it is you do and how you came to work in the field of living an authentic life?
I help people discover what I call the work they were born to do, which is what I call their kind of purpose, really. You know, I believe each of us has unique gifts and talents and unique contributions to make to life, which we can make through our work. But sadly for most of us, we don't, in our normal upbringing, get kind of pointed in the direction of finding what we're really here for. We get pointed in the direction of surviving through doing jobs that we don't necessarily want to do. So firstly, I help people discover what they want to do. I help a lot of people actually turn that into businesses as well. And I came across it myself, the hard way, in a way, which is how many of us come across these things, which is, in a way, not getting it right myself. I was unhappy in my own career in my late 20s and early 30s and had, I suppose, an early midlife crisis. And out of that kind of came a change of direction for me and a desire to contribute to others to help them change their direction if they wanted to.
Excellent. Yeah, and I can totally relate to that because it was certainly, and I'll share with you a bit later, it was certainly that crisis point. And for some people, as we go through and talk to many, many people that are suffering from ME, there is this sense of an identity crisis. Mm. And that's certainly, and certainly in the work we do as coaches and trainers, we come across, don't we, endless people that, perhaps if we've worked in the corporate world, they don't want to be there. They don't enjoy
I'm a great, sounds funny to say, but in a way I'm a great fan of crises and breakdowns in a way, because I think they can herald new births and new beginnings. But yeah. So much culturally, we're told, if we're in pain or we're suffering or there's something, wrong in our life, that we should just go on medication or take Prozac and get over it and then get back to normal. And actually I think, it's often a process of a kind of death and a rebirth for us. So I'm personally a great advocate of knowing that that's a possibility and being willing to go through it.
That's right. And I think, that's the message that we constantly discuss in the Chrysalis Effect, that, it feels really awful when you're not happy in what you're doing and it's affecting your health. But in actual fact, when you look back on it, it is that word rebirth, isn't it?
Yep. Okay. A death and a rebirth. Yeah.
So I know you said you worked in IT before.
Right, yeah.
So looking back, what made you choose to work in IT?
Good question. I was thinking about that, and I think really a couple of things. One thing is, as an early, guy in my early 20s, I was very, I suppose, driven really to be successful. Mm-hmm. So I did a degree in business studies and a diploma in marketing. And success for me at that age meant money and kind of status and working hard and playing hard. And the first job I ever had was selling televisions and videos. So I kind of suppose I went with the trends at the time. So this was like in the 80s when TV and video were just becoming popular and accessible. Yeah. So I worked in that, and then I worked in office systems, and then eventually in IT. So I worked in 3 different jobs. And I suppose it was partly the desire to earn a lot of money, be successful, to prove that I was a success, and secondly, I suppose, to go with the trends. But the truth is, I never was interested in IT particularly. You know, I'm much more of a people person, a creative person, and, you know, I was in it, but for the wrong reasons, really. I had no interest in IT whatsoever, really.
No, having met you, it is almost hard to put the two together,
yeah.
I must admit.
It was for many years, you know, and I had to live with that tension of thinking,
yeah.
Well, you know, I want to earn money and I want to be successful, so if it means doing something I don't enjoy and my heart's not in, tough, just get on with it.
Absolutely. So what kind of impact did that have on you?
Well, I think for a number of years, you know, like probably many of us are able to do, I just kind of overrode myself and just said, just get on with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, looking back on it, I wouldn't necessarily have the awareness that I have, you know, today then. But I suppose, in a way, I had just been trained, it almost felt from birth, to override my natural instincts and override my natural passions and, in a way, be a martyr and not do what I really wanted to do.
Yeah.
So in a way, it was almost like a badge of honour. It's like, well, I don't really enjoy doing this, but doesn't that make me an amazing person because I'm self-sacrificing? You know, and I don't say that with any pride now, but, you know, I certainly grew up in a household where kind of martyrdom was very valued and rewarded. So I think I spent a lot of my life, you know, being a martyr. But I guess for me, you know, late 20s, early 30s, it led to a crisis because there was so much of me that wasn't being expressed. And I suppose for me, you know, there was a kind of an awakening that happened. It was like, you know, maybe it doesn't have to be this way. Maybe there's another way it could be. And personally, I kind of got into counselling. I got into counselling for my own benefit to start with, just to help me make sense of, you know, some of the stuff that I was feeling and thinking, and realised that a lot of it's to do with my own upbringing. But because I got involved in the world of kind of counselling and personal growth, you know, it really appealed to me, and I thought, well, maybe I could make a career out of this myself. Maybe I'd love to help other people in some way. And I think a lot of people think that when they get into any kind of growth or counselling, they think, oh, maybe I could do this for a living. And I guess I just never grew out of it, and I did make it into my living. But the real crisis was, you know, I just can't carry on this way. It's like I almost felt like I was killing myself emotionally and spiritually, if not physically.
And I was just going to say, you know, when we're doing the wrong kind of work, we really are living the wrong life, aren't we?
Yeah. You know, and like, I think that's an element for me of martyrdom in a way, and self-sacrifice. It's almost like we are rewarded for not living our own life.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, you know, really you'd love to do this, but you're not going to do it, so therefore you'll be rewarded for sacrificing what you really want to do. And sadly, that is the kind of culture that a lot of work revolves around. And, you know, I talk about this now in my own work, which is, you know, we believe that you get rewarded for self-sacrifice and martyrdom to some extent. So, you know, the thing that most people believe, and I found this around the world, not just in the UK, is, you know, as long as you're not doing what you want to do, and as long as there's some misery and some sacrifice and some struggle involved in your work, then you deserve to be paid for it. But if you're enjoying it, you love it, you're inspired by it, and it's meaningful to you, that's not really work, and you shouldn't deserve to be paid for it, and you probably can't make much money out of it anyway. So it's almost like this split we have, which is, well, you either earn money doing something you don't like, or you do something you enjoy and love, but you can't make any money out of it. And for me, you know, my work today is very much about a third way, which is actually, you know, I believe and I live it myself, which is when you do find what you love and what you're here for, and you get clever and turning it into something you love, you can get paid for doing things that you love.
Brilliant. What was that sort of moment, that turning point when you said, that's it, not doing this anymore?
The two particular points that happened, I can't remember quite which order they came in, but two kind of road to Damascus moments. One, when I was working, my last company was called Digital. I was working in Holborn in London, and I used to try and get out of the office as much as I could because I just couldn't stand being there. So I remember one day just leaving the office and going for a walk on the embankment, you know, down by the Thames. And I was walking along, and I suddenly heard this voice behind me, and I turned around, and there was this homeless guy. And he said to me, cheer up, mate. And I thought, hang on, here I am in my suit, I've got a flat in Fulham, I've got a BMW, and this guy who's living on the street is telling me to cheer up. Hang on, there's something not quite right here. I need to change, I want to change. And then the other thing that happened was, I think this happened previously, actually. When I was selling computers, I actually won a trip to Antigua as an incentive trip, you know, for selling so many computers. And I got to Antigua, and obviously it's paradise in Antigua, I'd never been to the Caribbean before. But I kind of was sitting there on the beach with a beer in my hand thinking, I don't want to go back. you know, if I love being here, but if what I've had to do to get here has kind of killed me. And I thought, I just got to change this. I do not want to carry on like this. And obviously that scared me, because I scared myself, because it was like, you know, I knew I had to change. But those two particular instances kind of, you know, made me realise there is something wrong in the way that I'm living my life.
I can so relate to what you're saying, and had such similar similar experiences. It's just amazing. In the chrysalis effect, we know how vital it is to tap into our emotions by asking what energises us, and most importantly, what drains our energy.
Mm.
How important is this in the work you do?
Very much so. In a way, it is at the heart of it. But I think there are two things, like I've already alluded to. Number one is, you know, many of us have just had this conditioning around kind of martyrdom and self-sacrifice to some degree, whether that's religious or just cultural or just the family that we grew up in, which is, you know, you can't do what you want in this life, just get over it, and you know, life's tough, you just got to do what you don't want to do and make a living so you enjoy the rest of your life. So there's that dimension of it. So, you know, in a way, it's a kind of, you know, a cultural thing that we're conditioned in. But I am a great believer in tapping into what I call our inspiration, our sense of purpose, what I believe that we're really here for, because I do believe each person has a kind of purpose for being here. We're not just random bits of the universe. I think each of us has shown up in this life with something that will set us on fire, will light our heart up, will bring us to life. And I'm not saying that's always easy, but I do believe that when we find that, you know, we will tap into a new energy source that we won't have otherwise. You know, I know for me, when I'm in the flow of writing, when I'm in the flow of speaking, when I'm in the flow of running a workshop, or even having a great conversation like we're having now, it's like, this is what I was born for. This is what brings me alive. And I feel so sad when many people spend a lot of their lives never experiencing that. And I'm not saying that you can necessarily have that 24/7, but I know that I have enough of it in my life to make my life meaningful. You know, I know when I'm doing the work that I love doing, and when I'm doing it, I love it, and I know it contributes to the lives of others. I feel most alive when I'm doing that. So, does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. And your passion is literally coming down the phone. And that's what happens. The more we meet people that are living their sort of authentic purpose, as you mentioned there, there's going to be a lot of people that are listening to this, Nick, that are, you know, perhaps in a very low state right now. And still in that mindset where they think, you know, they need to do certain things. So what in your experience stops people from leaving the work that they don't enjoy?
Well, several, you know, obvious kind of big reasons. Number one, fear. Fear of change generally, fear of kind of moving into the unknown. Obviously worry about money. You know, how are you going to make money if you don't do what you're doing at the moment? And I suppose, you know, what certainly kind of really made my life difficult for 3 years. You know, it was almost like 3 years between being aware that I wanted to leave what I was doing and actually leaving what I was doing. And I suppose what I found difficult, and I think so many people do find difficult, is the amount of change that you think you want to create seems overwhelming. It's like, you know, where you are and where you want to get to just seems so far apart. You know, I could easily just tip into despair and go, how the hell am I ever going to get there? You know, I can see where I'd love to be, but the distance just seems too far. So I'm personally a great advocate of what I call just the baby steps approach. You know, just taking lots of little steps, a step a day will get you miles. But if you're trying to run a marathon in a day, you'll never do it.
No.
And it's really a tough one for many of us to learn, because, you know, we want things to be different. We want things to be different today. You know, it's like, you know, we're impatient. And so I suppose a part of it is patience as well. And I suppose, you know, it's easy for me to say now because I've done it. But I suppose also looking back, the thing that I needed was some hope. You know, I wasn't sure that I could make a radical change. But looking back on it now, obviously I have transformed my life from being, you know, to be honest, fairly miserable on some levels, to being a lot more happy and a lot more joyful. But that to me has been a pretty major radical change. But it's a change that I've taken a step at a time. So I suppose something else that anybody listening to this needs is somebody to give them hope, somebody to say, you can change. It may not be easy always, and it may feel like you've got lead boots on sometimes, but you can change. You can take your life in a different direction.
Well, that's great. In those 3 years where you felt you were kind of, you know, knowing that you wanted to change, but you were holding yourself back, what impact did that have on your health?
I think I was, you know, I wasn't ill as in had to be rushed to hospital kind of ill, but low energy. To be honest, this was 20 years ago. I'm not sure ME was diagnosed. I think maybe I had ME. I'm not sure, but, you know, a lot of what I understand ME is today, I think maybe I had that, but it wasn't spotted or wasn't named.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was low energy, I was just listless, and that was partly a health thing, you know, it becomes self-perpetuating, but also I think it was just because I was out of touch with what I suppose I'd call my essential self, you know, my core self, where that kind of energy resides. And I do believe there's a great link between, you know, misery and health and joy and health, you know, that whole area of, what do they call it today, psychoneuroimmunology, you know, the mind-body-spirit connection. And I met somebody, I don't know if you've heard of a woman called Martha Beck. Have you heard of Martha Beck?
No.
No, she's written a number of books. She's been on the Oprah Show a number of times and all sorts of stuff. And I did a workshop myself with her. I just attended her workshop last year. And she said something which really struck a chord with me. She's had a lot of health challenges herself. She said, when I'm in mission, I'm healthy. She said, when I'm not in mission, I can get ill. And I think it's quite kind of exciting but also challenging to think, you know, if we're not living the life we're supposed to live, there may be not an inevitability but a high chance that we're not going to be well. But when we're living the life that we were born to live, we'll be healthier. And almost our health can be a barometer. It's like, well, how on track are you? You know, if you're not healthy, then maybe you are off track. So your body will tell you what your heart and mind are trying to get across to you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So for our listeners that are I'm sure resonating with so much of what you're saying, what would you say to them to help them overcome that block, the blocks that they're experiencing?
Well, one of the dynamics that I certainly understand a lot more now than I did 20 odd years ago when I was kind of going through all this was what I now call resistance. And what I now understand is that when you are looking to change and you really do kind of strike a chord with the most positive change that you want to make, you know, in a way the work you were born to do, as I call it, or your soul's purpose, whatever language works for you, just whatever would make you happy, paradoxically, when we move towards what makes us happy, it's also what often brings up our greatest fear. So I think what I've learned in retrospect is the things that most terrified me or I most spent my energy trying to talk myself out of were actually the truest kind of direction of my life that some part of me was trying to blind me to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost to use your greatest fears and your greatest resistance as pointers to where your actually your greatest happiness and potentially your greatest success would lie. So I suppose my, you know, in another way of expressing that is on the other side of some of your greatest fears and greatest resistances will be energy, will be happiness, will be success. But you have to recognize that that resistance is not a stop sign. It's actually an invitation to grow. You know, in my language, it would be, you know, your ego trying to stop you doing what your soul wants you to do. You know, not everybody would see it that way, but if like there's just a part of you that knows what you'd love to do, there's another part of you that will try and blind you to that and not allow you to see it clearly. So use your fears often as a pointer, not as a stop sign, as a direction finder, not as a stop sign.
Oh, that's really helpful. I was thinking back to when I was ill with ME, and when you have that condition, you are desperate in your mind to get your life back.
Yeah.
That's what you keep asking for. So I was completely focused on trying to return to being a sales director. And I wouldn't have been ready to admit it at that point, but there were things in that job that I really hated doing. And yet I was still compelled to keep trying to get back to it. I've learned since that I was actually kind of workaholic tendencies and work really did dominate my life.
Sure.
It never occurred to me in those early days that my job could be making me ill.
No.
It was always something external to me. It would have really been useful to be able to realise this sooner. So what would be a good exercise for someone that might sort of be in that position?
What you're describing to me sounds like, you know, it's like wanting to move backwards and not wanting to move forwards.
Yeah.
So, you know, what I always suggest or what I often suggest is, you know, kind of a leap of imagination. Mm-hmm. You know, an expression that I learned recently was sometimes you need to grieve and disbelieve. So, you know, like you were believing that if you only went back, everything would be all right.
Yeah.
And it's the willingness to kind of say, actually, I don't really want to go back. You know, but you have to grieve the loss of what was in order to open you up to kind of new directions.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not sure this is an exercise, but it's somehow to kind of imagine the future that you would really love. And it's, I suppose the exercise is about allowing yourself in the most positive way, dream.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of us are told just to be so practical and down to earth around work rather than allow ourselves to dream about what we would love to do. Because for many of us, as soon as we start dreaming, all those negative voices come in and say, oh, you've been so unrealistic, you could never do this, and blah, 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 you know, all that negative stuff that we've all got in our own heads.
Yeah.
So allow yourself to positively dream and then start to move in that direction and be willing to grieve and disbelieve and go, you know what, actually, I don't want to go back. You know, yeah. I'm not sure what my future is going to look like, but I only want to move forward. I don't want to go backwards. You know, and certainly for me, I had so much of my identity, as you're describing, you know, tied up in... Mm-hmm. Selling £500,000 computers, selling yeah. to Japanese banks in the City of London, working for an $8 billion company.
Yeah.
All those things gave me a tremendous sense of myself. Well, no, they gave me a sense of myself, not necessarily tremendous, but they really kind of filled a hole in my own sense of worth and my own sense of self. So, you know, the part of the journey for me, and it sounds like it has been for you, is yeah. is to say, well, if I'm not those things, what else am I? Who else am I? And I think, you know, I've certainly had to and have enjoyed now finding a much stronger sense of who I am beyond those labels of status and position. You know, I feel that who I am now depends much less on those and much more on who I know myself to be.
Exactly. It's allowing ourselves to realise that we're not what we do.
No.
We're much more than
yeah.
that.
Yeah, you know, an expression I came across a while ago, which I really liked, is, you know, most of us have got spirits that are much too big for a job. And most of us have tried to kind of squeeze ourselves into a job because of either the money or the status or the kind of, you know, the elevation that can go with it. But the truth is, you know, your spirit is much bigger than any job you'll ever have. So, you know, you can create a life that allows your spirit to flow. And, you know, certainly I believe you can create work that is big enough for your spirit. But I don't think, you know, I don't think we can be confined to a job, and I don't think we need to identify ourselves with a job. And one other thought that I think is very helpful, I'll just throw it in here in case it's helpful for people listening.
Mm-hmm.
I think also one of the kind of bits of conditioning and ideas that many of us have been brought up to believe in is that you can only ever do one thing. So if you're going to give up one thing, you have to find the one new thing to replace it with.
Yeah.
You know, and I came across the idea probably 20 years ago of being what's called a portfolio worker, which mm-hmm. is where you do more than one thing. So that kind of gave me a permission to think, actually, you know, maybe it's not just one thing. And certainly in the coaching work that I do, most of the people that I work with actually don't want to do one thing. So I've come up with a new kind of expression, because I don't think portfolio worker sounds terribly romantic, and I'm a bit of a romantic soul, so I call it being a Renaissance soul. You know, and a Renaissance soul is based on the idea that, I think it was Leonardo da Vinci, you know, he was an artist and a poet and an architect and, you know, a futurist and all sorts of different things. As far as I know, nobody ever said to Leonardo, you know, get a job, Leonardo, figure out what it is that you're really supposed to be doing and just get on with it, will you? You're just a jack of all trades and master of none. So I want to share the idea that it may be a number of different things. Maybe you want to go back to a job 2 days a week and start something new for a couple of days a week, and maybe volunteer your time for a day a week. You know, really allow yourself to think, hang on, you know, how would I really love to use my time and my talent and my energies? What contribution do I want to make? What money do I need to earn? How can I do that? So it may be that you go back to something you don't particularly enjoy just a couple of days a week or 3 days a week, but then you start something new and much more meaningful to you. And that's legitimate. You know, it's not like, you know, you're doing something wrong. It's like, you know, more and more people today are not doing just one thing.
That's so true. And as you're talking, I remember that when I was recovering and I'd gone through my grieve and believe, and I'd let go of the you know, sort of said to, finally voiced that thing that I hadn't even been able to say to myself, let go of it all. And then when I started to feel better, I wanted to get back with people. So I did literally a job that I could do standing on my head 2 days a week.
Yeah,
and the release of wasn't great money, it didn't matter. It was just being with people and not feeling I had to come home and work till midnight. And, you know, just be able to literally do, I call them wall shop jobs, you know, where you can just literally go in, do your bit, come away. And while that was going on, I was looking and growing into the coaching work and, you know, realising that my passion was working and helping people, you know, realise all this stuff.
Yeah, thank you. And, yeah, I think it's a brilliant point. And, you know, one of the things I learned, you know, you know, the counselling I got into for myself many years ago was through transactional analysis. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know TA, but I found it very useful, transactional analysis. And one of the things that I learned from TA is, you know, one of the greatest, or two of the greatest human needs are for what's called structure and strokes. You know, and strokes are, you know, just contact with other people.
Yeah.
And structure is, you know, knowing what we're going to do and when. You know, and often, you know, if you're ill and not going into work anymore, you lose both. You lose structure and you lose strokes. So, you know, what you just described is a brilliant way of putting some structure and strokes back into your life whilst you're figuring out what you might like to do next. So again, I'm a really great advocate of that. You know, get social interaction back into your life, because I think often people feel guilty that they're not working, so therefore they punish themselves by not going out and enjoying themselves when they could.
Yeah.
So put some structure and strokes back in. Have joy, have fun where you can. You know, even earn bits of money doing something you don't, you know, isn't particularly meaningful to you, as you describe, but you know, have the contact and have some money coming in. Just do anything you can to support yourself.
That's great. It's really important when we're unwell to have that thing, that exciting thing to aim for. You know, you've mentioned the structure, which I think is absolutely key.
Mm.
I started to recover hugely when I needed to be somewhere at 9:30 in the morning.
Mm.
And you know, it's amazing how when we're focusing on other things outside of ourselves and other people, that, you know, a lot of the symptoms and things we've been experiencing start to alleviate, really. but having that, so when you haven't worked for some time due to illness, you really do lose a lot of confidence, and I'm sure you hear that all the time. I know that for me, there were things I wouldn't have even, I didn't have the confidence to apply for, which, you know, even a year, 2 years before, I wouldn't have even dreamt of applying for. What steps would help their confidence return to sort of get inspired? And what advice would you give them?
Well, little baby steps, like we've talked about. You know, it's not always a journey you're going to take in one big leap. So, you know, some of the stuff we've talked about just putting yourself in situations where you feel good about yourself. You know, and you get positive feedback just so that you can build up your confidence. And do a baby step that kind of stretches you every day. You know, so if it's just make an application, make a phone call, whatever it is that's kind of scaring you or daunting you a bit, take one step in the direction of your fear every day and go through that. And, you know, rewards and being kind to yourself, because I think, you know, what causes us so many problems is often us being harsh on ourselves and punitive on ourselves. It certainly was for me. I don't know about for you, but, you know, just acts of kindness to ourselves, you know, feeding ourselves well, exercising ourselves well, putting ourselves in the presence of people that enjoy us and love us and support us and encourage us, not just for what we achieve and what we do, but for who we are. So I think often, you know, that this stage, you know, that we're talking about here, it's often about kind of getting a stronger sense of who we are, irrespective of our achievements. You know, because I think often what happens is, you know, we live, you know, one of the expressions I use is we live our life as a kind of compensation. It's like deep down, you know, certainly for me, you know, part of what went on for me was I actually didn't feel very good about myself, which is why I was so driven to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there came a time when, however successful I tried to make myself, I couldn't escape the bad feelings I had, you know, and I had to kind of go through these feelings of just feeling a failure and just feeling like I wasn't good enough. And certainly I got, you know, coaching and counselling support to go through some of those, to make sense of them and sift through them, so I could see, ah, this is what was going on underneath all this. So another way of getting support would be, you know, some kind of coaching support or counselling support, or maybe even some therapy support. You know, mm-hmm. I personally certainly don't ever see that as a failure. I wouldn't be where I am today without the help of several good coaches and counsellors and therapists. You know, that's been a very important part of my own journey. But I think I would also add a bit to that. You know, I kind of got deep into to kind of my own personal growth at some stages and thought I could probably spend the rest of my life delving into my own issues, and maybe I will do in a way. But I also thought, hang on, you know, I can do this forever and then, you know, one day start my dreams. But what I also realized was, you know, I can do this and I can start my dreams, you know. And so instead of waiting to get yourself fully together before you start doing the things that you dream about doing, start doing them as well as kind of delving into whatever it is that you may need to delve into. So I'm a great believer in taking little steps on your dreams on a daily basis, not waiting for some day when you feel good enough. Because in my experience, you know, I very rarely feel good enough to do a lot of the things that I do. I often have to act in the face, even today, of some kind of anxiety or a bit of, you know, fear or a bit of trepidation. But I think that's also what makes life exciting. It's like if every day you kind of just grow and stretch yourself a little bit, you know, that's what keeps you alive and vital.
Absolutely. just wanted to mention the healing effect of letting go.
Mm.
And having done that myself, I know how amazing it feels when you finally have the courage to let that thing that you've been hanging on to and resisting, you know, releasing. Just how huge that feels for you.
Mm.
And I'm sure you had the same experience as well when you walked away from those jobs and you know, things that weren't really giving you fulfillment. Once we let go of that thing, the body can then start to sort of heal, because that stress pattern that we've been held in for such a long time can release some energy, can't it?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So in terms of that, what it's bridging the gap, isn't it? Because then doors can start opening.
Yeah.
And it's trying to help people to see that will happen.
Yeah, well, and I see this happening on two levels. I don't know what your experience is, but, you know, I think on one level there is a process of what I would call life with a capital L. You know, whether you call that the universe, whether you just call that nature, whether you call it God, whether you call it higher power. To me, it doesn't matter what you call it. But for me, you know, as I've let go of what was and embraced what I would love to be, you know, things have happened, you know, you call them synchronicities or serendipities or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But things have happened in such marvelous ways that I could never have anticipated. You know, just incredible things happen when you start moving in the direction of your joy, I think, and your heart. So on one level it works on a, you know, a kind of universal level, I think. But then there's another level where it does need to be planned and implemented. You know, one of the examples I talk about is, you know, I used to collect stamps when I was a child, and I thought, you know, all these different countries around the world that I thought I'd love to visit one day, and I always wanted to visit South Africa, but I'd never figured out how I was going to go visit South Africa. About a year after I wrote my first book and it came out, I got this email from somebody in Cape Town saying, I was in an exclusive bookstore in Cape Town and your book practically fell off the shelf in front of me. I read it and I just wanted to know if you'd ever be willing to come to South Africa. You know, cut long story short, I've now been to South Africa 8 times as a result of that initial connection. Now, obviously, I had to write the book for her to pick it up in Cape Town. But, you know, it's led to so many doors opening for me, and I've just got a love of South Africa and a love of Africa that I get to fulfill because I wrote a book that people in South Africa have related to, and all sorts of amazing things have happened. So, you know, to me, that's an example of, you know, do things on a practical level, take steps on a very practical and real level, but as you do that, life's magic also begins to kick in. So I'm a great believer that you take baby steps because they cover a bit of distance, but more than the distance they cover, you put yourself in a position where life's magic and miracles can kick in and start happening for you. But most of us get caught in a trap sometimes, which is to say, well, when the miracles start happening, then I'll start moving.
Yeah.
No, you've got to start moving for the miracles to happen and the magic to happen. So I hope it's kind of paradoxical and, you know, embraces both, but I believe in practicality and I believe in magic and miracles.
Well, that's a wonderful sort of note to end on, and I've certainly got so much out of talking to you today, Nick, and I'm sure all of our listeners will have lots to take away from this today.
Oh, so my great pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
Heartfelt thanks for that. What kinds of events or things that you may be working on at the moment that might be useful for for our people that are listening today?
Yeah, well, I do all sorts of things. You know, I do everything from kind of evenings in London because, you know, and I'm a great believer, you know, as we've touched on here really, which is when you're wanting to change direction or move in a more positive direction, you need a lot of support for that. You know, you need practical support, you need emotional support, you need spiritual support and all sorts of different things. So I run kind of evenings one or two times a month in London. I run day events, I run coaching programs, all sorts of different things around London and in the UK. I live in London, but I also work all around the UK and internationally. The easiest way to get hold of them, I know you're probably going to put a link on, but the easiest thing for people, if they want to, is to just go to my website, which is inspired-entrepreneur.com, and download the free program that I have, which is about discovering the work you were born to do. It's a video and audio and text program, and if you're interested about starting your own small business. But firstly, it's about just kind of reimagining work. So that's a great starting point because I know that's been life-changing for many people. It's something I feel so passionately about that I've created a free program that's available for anybody to have. I think over the last year at this point, about nearly 20,000 people have downloaded it. I'm very, very honoured. In the last couple of years, you know, it's touched the lives of a lot of people. So go get that for free, and then you can look at all the other stuff that I'm doing. That would be my kind of initial suggestion.
No, that's wonderful, and it's going to be exciting to, I'm sure we'll be talking about people that have, you know, come to our program and heard some of your magic today, and it's enabled them to move forward and transform, which is what everything we're trying to do is about.
Thank you, and have hope, you know, because I think sometimes when we're, you know, not feeling good, the thing we need is hope and then kind of direction about how to change. So I hope, you know, it's given some people that today, so bless you. Thank you for having me on, I really appreciate it.
That's okay. Thank you so much, Nick. I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thanks very much. Bye.
Bye.